This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast, part of the Seneca Network from the China Project. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I'm your host, Jared Turner, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series. And after all is said and done, a lot more will be said than done. My co-host is John Passon, co-founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, Chinese Grammar Wiki, Sinosplice.com, and after 4 minutes into his run, he decided to work on his personality instead. How do you know when you're ready to level up? What are the best study habits? How can I immerse myself in Chinese, and will Chinese movies help my speaking? These are a collection of questions we've received from listeners this year, and in this episode, John and I are going to answer them. What questions do you have? Guest interview is with Shannon Kennedy, an extraordinary polyglot whose love of Chinese redefined her friendships in ways she could have never imagined. Let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner coming at you here from Utah in the United States.
Hi everybody, my name is John Passon. I am in Shanghai, China. How's it going?
Things are heating up over there, John. Summer is here.
Things are heating up, and I'm getting ready to escape to finally visit the United States after like 4 years, being stuck under lockdown or whatever, various forms of COVID nonsense. So I'm looking forward to going back to the U.S.
Well, welcome back, John. We're excited to have you.
Thanks, man. I hope you're going to meet me at the airport. That's what a good friend would do, right?
Definitely.
All right. So today, what have we got?
Today, John, we are going to handle a whole bunch of listener questions. That's right. We have had a lot over the last year, and there are a number that we haven't gotten to. So that's what we're going to do. You asked, we're listening, you're listening, we're answering. Here it is, listener questions.
Yeah, some of them take a little more explanation, and maybe it's not easy to fit it into another episode. So we're just going to give them plenty of room to breathe, plenty of discussion. We're going to handle a bunch of questions today.
All right, John, let's kick it off.
All right.
Okay, our first question is going to be from John Kerr. He writes, just wanted to send a note saying how much I've benefited from your podcast and Graded Reader series. I love how you fuse pedagogical research with stories from amazing people who are lifelong Chinese learners. I credit Mandarin Companion Graded Readers for launching me from basic word recognition to intermediate proficiency 2 years purely through self-study. Hey, not bad. Your Graded Readers accelerated my learning while making it a pleasure to engage in. Well, that's great. Now, here's the question. He says, some educators point out that extensive reading is at odds with the current science of reading movement, that extensive reading is an outdated, quote-unquote, whole language model. How would you address this argument? All right, John, I know that you have delved a little bit deeper into this than I. What would you have to say?
Okay, so I did my master's in applied linguistics, focused on second language acquisition, but it was focused on Chinese. And this whole language thing is more of an English phenomenon. So a lot of times it's like whole language versus direct instruction. And like whole language is like a more holistic approach. You do a lot of reading. And then direct instruction is often like more of a skill-based approach, like learning rules. Often it's like phonics, right? So phonics is studying the patterns that we use to spell different sounds in English. So obviously Chinese is quite different. Like we don't have phonics with Chinese. We don't have spelling rules. It's pretty different. But actually I have learned quite a bit about phonics because I learned to read English as a child through phonics. You know, I was a great reader from a young age. And also I taught my kids here in Shanghai to read English using the principles of phonics. And I recently published a book for kids, for like first graders who are just starting to read, learning the principles of phonics. That book is called Go Kid Squid. It's on Amazon. Shameless plug. Okay, so how do I answer this question? Well, I did look into this a bit more about whole language and graded readers and extensive reading are sometimes grouped with whole language. The idea that you want to learn to read, just read. You know, it sounds simplistic, but the advocates will say it's not quite that bad. But I think this question is a bit of a false dichotomy. It's not like you have to choose one or the other. And I don't think many teachers would choose to go entirely at one end of the spectrum. Like, I know that a lot of teachers will teach phonics, but then they'll also encourage the kids to read a lot. And they're not mutually exclusive. So I think extensive reading is great. There's plenty of science behind it. But definitely there's no harm in learning, you know, stuff like some grammar rules or, you know, studying the characters a bit more to understand the structure of characters. Those two are not mutually exclusive.
I think the only thing I would add to this, John, is, and I have to preface this, that I still kind of have a very loose understanding of what this whole language model is. But as I've read papers and been involved in sometimes different symposiums and speeches and lectures from people in the extensive reading community, by no means are the advocates and the researchers behind this saying that all you need is extensive reading, right? And that really to develop, I'm going to say it, John, fluency, the F word, okay, in the language, that you are going to need a wide variety of things. But extensive reading is a very effective and powerful tool to help advance and progress your language learning. But, you know, extensive reading is about comprehensible input, but we also need to have comprehensible output. And we need to have a lot of different contexts and ways to use and interact and use the language as a tool. So, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I think that about covers it. It's definitely a complex issue, but I think extensive reading is fine. It is definitely useful. You just don't apply it while excluding everything else. It's part of a well-rounded curriculum.
Now, John has one other question that we're going to hit up here. He says, what graded materials would you recommend for nonfiction reading? Are there good nonfiction graded materials for intermediate learners? Okay, that's a good question. And honestly, there are not a whole lot of nonfiction materials out there that I am aware of. Mainly, there's kind of one resource that does news called The Chairman's Bow. But aside from that, I haven't really come across nonfiction graded reading content.
Yeah, if you're looking for stuff like, you know, biographies or science books or that kind of nonfiction material, I am not aware of materials like that for Chinese language learners. If you know about some, or maybe even made some, we'd love to hear about it. We definitely haven't seen everything, but I got to say, there can't be a lot of them out there.
And there are a lot of teachers here in the U.S. who are teaching in Chinese dual immersion programs where they have to teach subjects in Chinese, like science and social studies, that they have been looking for these types of materials. But yeah, I like I said, I'm just not aware of it. I know teachers are writing some of their own stuff. So like John said, if you know something about some of this stuff, hey, drop us a note.
Okay, so this next one's from Adam. He says, hey, firstly, I just want to express real appreciation for the Mandarin Companion books. I'm currently at breakthrough level, and it's great to have found such comprehensive and comprehensible material at this level, a real game changer. The main reason for my message, though, is that I'm wondering how the progression works with the series. So I'm at the newcomer stage, the breakthrough stage, with 150 characters, and the next stage is 300 characters. That's our level one. Once I've read a few of the breakthrough titles, can I just skip to the level one? Do the books themselves create a bridge between the different levels? If not, how do I know which characters I should be studying to progress to the next level? Any thoughts would be most welcome.
Well, hey, that is a great question. I do talk to a lot of learners about this, and the number one answer I would give is that focus on your reading speed. That if you are able to read any of the books at like a fluid reading speed where you're not having to stop all the time and you can start really processing and, you know, the language like quickly in your head, you know, maybe a rule of thumb can be sometimes like, you know, 60 to 80 characters a minute. I mean, really, you should be able to get up to 100, 120, but that is a good indication that you're able to read fluidly enough and that you should be able to move up to the next level. But John, you're the one who actually created this leveling system. So you're kind of I'd say you're even more of an expert on this. So what would you have to say?
Okay, so for the breakthrough level, we have a list of 150 core characters, and we really stick to that for the core vocabulary in the books, and that includes things like character names and place names. But the key vocabulary words which go outside of that 150 core all come from level one, and we're quite strict about that. So when you're learning the key words in the breakthrough books, you're building towards level one. So yes, that is a bridge there. Then what happens with level one is there's 300 core words for that level, but sometimes there are words which are not within that 300, and those come, not entirely, we're a little bit more lenient with level one, but mostly from level two. So within level one, as you read more and more books and you learn those keywords, you are building towards level two. So if you're struggling a bit, you know, it's not too painful, but, you know, level one isn't easy, then yeah, keep reading level one. And then once, as Jared says, your reading speed seems to really be picking up, and maybe you're looking for more of a challenge, some more, you know, some more meat to sink your eyes into, then you're probably ready for the next level.
And that's a great feeling. So, hey, get out there and get reading and level up.
All right, great question, Adam. So let's go to the next one.
All right, this comes from Ming, and she writes, "Hi, John and Jared. I am a Chinese dual immersion program teacher. I've bought all of the Graded Reader books for my students. I enjoy reading your books to my students very much, and I'm also a big fan of the podcast. Topics are interesting and helpful. Because of your talks and interviews, I understand better about how people learn Chinese." Then she asks some questions, and she says, "I'd also like to know, what are the habits that would help Chinese learners the most? Do you have experience about your Mandarin study habits that you can share? Wish to hear back from you. Thank you very much, Ming." Well, hey, Ming, thank you so much for dropping us a note. I guess we don't get a lot of notes from teachers, but this is great to hear that you're using Graded Readers in the classroom and that's helping your students.
So when I think back to my studies in the U.S., that is how I started. Like, one of the things that I used to do a lot is just think about things that I wanted to express in Chinese. And if I learned a new word that I thought was useful, then I'd try to, like, make sentences with it. And then I would check that with my teacher. Also, the words that I learned in class or that I learned from, you know, readings we were doing, I would make sure to look those up and see how they were used. And try to find stuff that was practical. And if I could find stuff that was really useful, then I'd make notes on that, how I could use it. So I was really focusing on what I could use because I did know that I was going to go to China someday. But another thing that I started doing, which is more of like an individual learner habit, is I found it very hard to remember the tones of a word. And, you know, the problem with tones for, I think, all learners through intermediate, maybe a little later, it's not just that you pronounce the tones wrong, it's that you don't even remember what the correct tones are. So if you can't remember what the correct tones are, then of course you're not going to pronounce them correctly unless you just get lucky and
just guess, right?
I can say from experience, you don't get lucky very often with tones. So the really annoying thing, and it's a bit of a perfectionist habit, and I know not everybody likes to do this, but I found it very useful, was that I would frequently check, like, am I correct about these tones? I think it's this, but is it? Because I don't totally trust my memory. And there were so many times when I thought I knew the tone, and maybe I'd been pronouncing it with this tone for like a year, and then I looked it up, and I'm like, are you kidding me? This is the wrong tone. And so just kind of getting in the habit of checking my tones and then doing my best to pronounce them correctly, which, you know, is still a challenge in itself. I found that helped me a lot to move towards accurate pronunciation more quickly.
Those are good habits, you know, and I think everybody's going to have, you know, like little different habits and things that they've done.
Okay, so my habits are a little bit like introverted, individual. What about you, Jared? I'm guessing yours are a bit more social.
Yeah, I think you're right, John. I think one habit that I've developed is trying to always look for opportunities to speak Chinese. And okay, that works well for me. I'm a bit more of an extroverted guy. This does get me into trouble sometimes because it's kind of like, actually, I'm Korean or whatever. But hey, looking for those opportunities to speak has definitely helped me. Not just now, it helps to keep up my Chinese a little bit. But it when I did live in China and I was in more of a Chinese speaking environment, I definitely got a lot more practice in the language. So that's definitely helped. And I would say even for a classroom environment like this, for a teacher like Ming, you know, if the students have an opportunity, really any time to use their Chinese outside of the classroom, that can be incredibly motivating and validating to them. So, definitely looking for those opportunities. And honestly, the other habit I would mention, I don't know if it's really you'd say a habit, but I think it's just consistency. It's more of like a quality. You know, even if you are using some sort of poor method to learn and, you know, all you're doing is, you know, Duolingo or whatever, well, doing it consistently is still a good thing. And doing something consistently is better than not doing anything at all. And so, you know, having a level of consistency in learning and studying is a big deal. And I think a really, I guess, a hallmark of any real advanced learner of any language, or really anything, really.
Yeah, you need to have some kind of routine. It needs to be a part of your life and not just something you occasionally remember to do. Okay, so this next one is a comment on YouTube from Evan's Show. The comment is, I really like the advice to not just memorize each aspect of a word, pinyin, tones, character, and to instead understand it in the context of the way it is used. Otherwise, we end up learning standalone words and thinking about them in English instead of in Chinese. There are many aspects of the language, tones, characters, that make vocabulary easy to forget, so you need to be comfortable with how it's used. The interview with Amy Selico is very interesting. I can see how having Chinese-speaking roommates early on in her Chinese studies would help her to become more proficient. What simple tools can we use to learn the context of a word, like how flashcards are used to memorize? Okay, so simple tools. I think the obvious answer is just dictionaries with sample sentences. It has to be a good dictionary. Pleco not only has a decent default dictionary, but you can add extras, and then you can look at the sample sentences, and then there's all kinds of context in there. So that's maybe too obvious of an answer, but that is one answer that I would want to go to first.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a tricky thing to answer, you know, to Evan's question here, because, you know, you say you have some sort of word and you want to get a better understanding of that, and you could just, heck, you could put it in Google or, you know, Baidu or whatever and Google it, and you're going to come up with, you know, how it's being used, maybe in different ways or things, but are you going to be able to understand that sentence? So it's also kind of really dependent upon what your level is and how good is your comprehension already overall with the language. So this can be a tricky thing. That's why, you know, as John's just mentioning, dictionaries usually are going to have a little bit, like, not as complex sample sentences. But I think overall, we'd still advocate that the best way to really learn words in context is reading, extensive reading, highly effective. You get to see, hopefully, if it's real graded material and it's at your level and it has some of these target words that you are trying to learn, that you're going to see them used again and again in the text in many different contexts, and it's going to help you really understand the word a lot better.
And then if you have a Chinese teacher that you can talk to, then take that word that you're learning and make sure that you're learning something that's useful, because I think we all fall into that trap from time to time of just learning a word from a dictionary, and you can even find contexts. And then you ask your teacher, and your teacher is like, oh, that's from 50 years ago. Or, oh, we just never say that. So it's also good, despite being able to find these contexts, to confirm the common usage of the word.
Okay, this next one comes from a YouTube comment on episode 105, What You Should Know About Chinese Literature, from Trish. She writes, Hi, Jared and John. This was my first time listening to one of your podcasts, and I just want to thank you for all the wonderful advice and insight. I'm nearly 2 years into my Chinese learning journey, and I've always wanted one day to be able to read Chinese literature. Like you guys mentioned, though, it's very tough for a foreign learner. I just wanted to ask, how would you go about having more Chinese in your life if you weren't living in a primarily Chinese-speaking country to improve your comprehension ability? John, you're living in China, but how would you answer this?
So we actually did a whole podcast about this way back in episode 6. The title of the podcast is Chinese Immersion, the Home Version. So we talked a lot about, like, finding music, finding movies, you know, finding ways to incorporate that into your life and in your studies. Obviously, you can talk to people online as well. Depends a lot on your interests and on, you know, what you want to do with your Chinese, but I think that's probably a good place to turn. What do you think, Jared? Do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, definitely. There's two interviews that I've done that come to mind. One is from episode number 68, Why Is Chinese So Damn Hard? It's an interview with Sarah Koutalakos. And Sarah, she is, like, Canadian. She's not Asian. Let's put it this way. And she lived in Asia and with her kids, but they moved back to Canada, I think, when they were still, you know, maybe like 8 or 10 or something. But she only speaks Chinese to her kids. And so she forces that the Chinese language environment with her kids. I thought that was really interesting. And her kids are quite proficient now in Chinese, of course. Another interview was episode number 87. It's the 6 types of Chinese learners, and it's with Dylan Jaggery. And Dylan has never been to China or Taiwan or any Chinese-speaking country, but he has a very high level of proficiency in Chinese. And the way he did this is he just got very involved in Chinese communities, specifically at his university, and joined clubs and things like that. And so he just really made a lot of friends and got very socially involved with Chinese people and has a very high level of proficiency in Chinese. So, those are two stories that, I think is one worth definitely taking a look at. But I think overall is, even with that's the two interviews that I'm mentioning here, is that you need to find a way to make it like relevant and as an actual tool in your daily life if you really want to try to create an immersive environment for yourself.
All right, great. These interviews are always a great way to see how some other people did it because, everyone's experiences vary. And then from YouTube, episode number 8, Tones, Music, and Confidence from Catherine, we have this comment. I particularly liked your advice about confidence and that it might help to pretend you are playing a role when interacting with native speakers. That's such a creative way of getting around shyness. I also like the interviewee's point that you should try to gain lots of conversational practice with all different kinds of people, as different people will speak differently and have different things to offer that you can learn from. Do you think consuming Chinese media like TV shows, movies, or social media is an effective way to get a feel for tones and natural speaking flow? Jared, what do you think?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think it depends. you can definitely turn on the radio. It's Chinese radio. There's a lot of ways to do that, or stream some sort of TV show or movie or whatever. And I don't know. My general feel is that just in general, getting exposed to it over a while, if you've never had any exposure to Chinese, it helps to just start to kind of hear some of the rhythm and the sounds that are in the language. But not necessarily is that going to help you really improve your tones a lot. I think what's important is making sure that there is an element. I mentioned this, is that it's not going to be a high comprehensible level, I think, for most learners, but an element of comprehensibility on what you're listening to.
Yeah, so my answer to this would be an enthusiastic yes, but you do have to manage expectations. You can't expect to be understanding everything, if you're at an elementary level. And it's also not realistic to even be able to find something at your level in many cases. So you just have to be kind of content with enjoying the sounds of the language, maybe recognizing a word here or there, a phrase here or there. Over time, it's going to get better. But just definitely manage your expectations.
I will say that one thing that you will hear when you jump into some of this media is you'll hear sometimes the different accents and pronunciations and kind of how things are kind of all pronounced maybe a little different than when you might hear in on some sort of recording or with your teacher. And that's actually helpful to me because I'm like, oh, what do they say? Then I'm like, oh, I know how to that. Okay. They're just kind of, kind of more slangish. It's not even slang, John. What do you call that when you kind of just say something like kind of slur it together more colloquial-wise?
Well, it's called elision, but, it's just the informal colloquial way of slurring your speech, not because you're drunk, but because you're lazy.
Well, those are the questions we have for this episode. So if you have a burning question for us, it could be about anything related to Chinese or learning Chinese or whatever, drop us a note. We'd love to hear from you.
And please feel free to keep these comments, questions coming. We will keep answering them.
So you can drop a comment on YouTube. We do have all of our episodes up on YouTube, of course, on iTunes. You can drop us an email, wherever. It's all good. These are all harvested from all of those sources. So we'd love to hear from you guys, and we appreciate you listening to this podcast.
Thanks, guys.
All All right, now it's time for a word from our sponsor. And today our sponsor is...
Manner Companion Chinese Graded Readers. These are easy-to-read Chinese novels that you can read.
Today we are talking about a level one graded reader, The Country of the Blind.
Okay, so this one is adapted from a short story by H.G. Wells, not as well known maybe as The Time Machine or War of the Worlds, but it's still a great story. And we find that adapting a short story into a short, easy-to-read Chinese novel works very well. This is one of our most popular stories and one of my favorites, I have to say.
That's right. You put a special twist on the end of that story.
Yeah, I took the liberty of making a tiny change, but I'm not going to tell you what was changed or what the original ending was because you're going to have to read it and find out. It is a Chinesified version. You know, it's adapted to a Chinese context, so it's going to be different from the original anyway, but in a very good way for learners of Chinese.
No spoilers here. That's right. So it is The Country of the Blind, Manner Companion Level 1 graded reader using only 300 basic characters. You can find it on Amazon, iBooks, Kobo, or wherever you get your books.
Check it out. Let us know what you think.
All right, now it's time for rants and raves. John, what do you have for us today? Do you have a rant or do you have a rave?
I have a rave today. This is for an organization in Shanghai known as Furry Friends. China sometimes gets a bad rap with regards to treatment of animals, but there are tons of animal lovers in Shanghai and, you know, all over the country. And Furry Friends is one of these, like, rescue organizations. They regularly rescue abandoned cats and dogs, and then they find homes for them. And, you know, they do it as a free service because they love animals. And this is actually how we found our dog, Sophie, about 3 years ago. And she's a great dog. And so I hope more and more people will be adopting rescue animals. But the reason I actually thought of this today is because I just recently found out that a friend that I made last year, someone that I just met through a friend, she just messaged me today and asked me a random question. She's never been to my home, but she was like, "Do you have a small black dog?" And I was like, "Oh no, did my dog get out or something? Why is she asking me this?" Well, it turns out that this friend had seen a picture on the Furry Friends pet adoption website of when that dog was placed with our family. And she was actually the one that found my dog as a puppy abandoned in a community like 3 years ago.
Aww.
And she was just kind of checking in to see where the dog ended up because she was so cute and she was just thinking about the dog. And just by coincidence, she knows me. So I thought that was interesting.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, we're all connected by this like
web
of kindness and care for animals. So I just wanted to give Furry Friends and also all the other, you know, animal rescue organizations in Shanghai and in China a little plug because they do great work.
Well, thanks for bringing that to our attention, John. That's a heartwarming story.
It is. All right. Glad to share. Jared, what do you got? Rant or rave?
Okay, John, I have a rave. As per mentioned in our last episode, I spent the last 2 weeks in England for a Chinese language conference.
Yep.
More to come on next episode about that. But my rave is about Chinese restaurants wherever you go. Now, this rave is not about the food that you find at Chinese restaurants in the West, because you're going to find the standard Chinese American food, which, hey, there's some great stuff. I mean, John, come on. Who doesn't love, like, orange chicken?
Who doesn't love beef with broccoli?
Yeah, it's good stuff, right? Maybe it's not exactly, you know, real, authentic Chinese food, but, and almost every Chinese restaurant you're going to go to, you're going to find Chinese people. So I came into one area late that night. There was a Chinese restaurant there, and I was looking for some things, you know, where I could get something, whatever. So I was dropped there for dinner, and I started speaking in Chinese to the waiter and the owner. And lo and behold, they're like, "Oh no, you don't need to go get this. Here, you can borrow some of it." You know, they're so helpful. So I totally love this travel hack that was told to me. It was John D'Andrea. He mentioned this. It was an interview I've done way past. I think it's maybe episode 10-ish or something. Now he was traveling in Paris, and you know, if he didn't speak French, but just go to a local Chinese restaurant, he'd get help. So same thing happens. And I just love that aspect of like, hey, there's the Chinese diaspora is global. And it's like, doesn't matter what country you're in, you're likely to find a Chinese restaurant there with Chinese people, and you can speak with them. And especially when you're in a pinch, they can help you out.
Nice. And I checked, that was episode 10. Good memory, Jared.
Whoa, that was like throwing a dart in the blind.
Episode 10, The Stages of Learning Chinese from 2019.
Great episode. Awesome guy, John D'Andrea. We've mentioned a bunch of these interviews today, but that was a good one.
For sure.
But you know my favorite interview, John?
What?
Episode 100, where we get to listen to you.
Oh.
All right, so do we have an interview?
We do. It's with Shannon Kennedy. It first aired back in April of 2020.
She's awesome. She speaks more languages than you, John.
Oh, snap.
I don't speak that many languages, dude.
What, only five?
Oh, more like four.
Are you counting English in there?
Yeah.
All right, guys, let's cut to that.
My name is Shannon Kennedy. I run a website called Eurolinguist. That's with an E at the end. It's this French spelling of linguist.
Shannon and I got in touch a few years ago when she had read some of our graded readers.
I am also the head coach of the Fluent in 3 Months Challenge, formerly known as the AD1 Challenge. I am the resident polyglot and language expert at Drops, and I run a conference called Women in Language with Lindsay from Lindsay Does Languages and Kirsten from Fluent Language. And I also am one of the three co-hosts, along with Kirsten and Lindsay, of Language League.
That's quite a long list of things. As you can see, Shannon is knee-deep in languages. What I like about her story is how her pursuit of languages has facilitated connections that have been enriching and even redefined friendships into something deeper than she could have ever imagined. Stay with us. So I think what would be great to start with you is I would like to hear about like what got you involved in like learning multiple languages.
Is a little bit of a strange story. I was at Queen's University Belfast in Northern Ireland.
Where are you from, though?
California. I have Irish heritage, among other things. So I was getting ready to do my master's degree, and I was going over the program requirements, and I was a music major. I started in music performance, and when I went to do my master's degree, I decided to study ethnomusicology, which is kind of this hybrid between anthropology and musicology. And one of the program requirements was that I had a fluent reading ability in Spanish, Italian, German, and French.
Oh, yeah. Minor detail, right?
Exactly. I already spoke French, so I had that one covered. I had studied it in school, and then I also had French family. So I enrolled in a program for German, French, and Italian. I decided not to do Spanish because they wouldn't let me enroll in any more than 3 courses at one time. I did try. It wasn't for lack of trying. I tried. So I was doing the program for that. And then I remember at one point I was sitting with my advisor and he was asking why I was doing all these language classes. And I said, well, it was one of the program requirements. It's on the requirements. And I showed him where it was. And he goes, huh, even I didn't know that. So I was the only student in the whole program who noticed this requirement and was actually doing it. Turns out it totally wasn't obligatory. But at that point I was already knee deep in it. And my school had this really amazing language library. It was called the Language Lab, and there was like this whole wall of books. I studied across the first resource I had ever seen for Croatian, and my dad's dad was Croatian, and he didn't even know that his dad spoke another language till he was 10 years old. The first time he ever heard his dad speak was they went to like some family reunion in Philadelphia, and his dad was there and one of his brothers was speaking in this other language that my dad didn't recognize. I guess my grandfather was just kind of sitting there with his arms crossed, and my dad's like, oh, okay, cool. My dad doesn't understand either. And then at one point someone asked my grandfather a question, and my grandfather replied in Croatian. My dad said his jaw literally hit the floor. He had no idea that his dad spoke another language.
Wow.
And so I often heard him lamenting about how, you know, he wished his dad had shared that language with him and his brothers. And I guess it kind of just stuck with me. So when I found this Croatian book, I was like, I can finally learn Croatian. I don't need my grandpa to teach me, because unfortunately, my grandpa passed away when I was really, really young. So I never really even got the chance to get to know him. But I still felt like it was a way I could connect. So I started to study Croatian independently. And it was really when I discovered that like I enjoyed doing that.
What was enjoyable about it to you?
It was something about the process of learning the language. I mean, I am a musician, so there's like this certain degree of discipline and, you know, you study something and you work on it and there's exercises that you do and you can kind of pick specific things to target and improve on in music and languages a lot in the same way. So that personality and that training that I already had, it allowed me to apply it to something new. And then, you know, when I was doing my field work and I was going to France, the fact that I, you know, was like conversing with these people, interviewing them on an academic level, getting access to these like older French resources and still being able to kind of access the language and understand, and like that feeling of success and that like reward was just really gratifying for me. So I was like, well, if I could do it with these languages, then why not try and do it with other languages?
But what was it about Croatian? I mean, you had already learned French. And you were studying all those other languages, but you said, I'm just curious, because you said you felt like it was a little bit connecting to your grandfather who had passed away.
I think it was, part of it was that connection, but for me too, and I know that this is very different for everyone, like what languages sound nice, what languages are aesthetically pleasing in different ways. But for me, there's just something about the way that Croatian sounds, the pronunciation, the way it all kind of comes together, that just really appeals to me. So, and when I started learning my first words, like my favorite word is naprstek, which means like thimble in Croatian. But it's like everything about Croatian that I love. So it has the rolled R, it has a consonant cluster, and there's like just these different qualities and characteristics to Croatian that just, it's like, oh, I just love this language.
That's really neat. Okay, when you came up for graduation, did you actually meet the language requirements for your degree?
Yeah, I got my certificates for all of the languages that I was formally taking classes for.
So you graduated, and what did you start doing then?
So I graduated, and I was out of college, had student debt, and I was desperate to work. I actually ended up working at State Farm. So I was basically answering the phones, calling people who didn't pay their bills, doing things like that. From there, I kind of got poached away from that position, but it ended up kind of sidestepping me into an industrial tech industry. I was in that position for 6 years, and to kind of maintain my sanity and continue to have a purpose for all of the language study I was still doing outside of work, I started my blog and writing about my process for learning languages. Because with music, I was always kind of taught to pay it forward. I had a lot of really amazing mentors in music. And my parents constantly told me, it's like, you know, these people are doing this for you. So it's your responsibility when it's your turn to do it for them. And I did. I had this website called Teen Jazz that I ran for like 12 to 15 years, where I shared everything that I learned being a professional musician with younger musicians. So I was like, okay, I'm doing this for music, so I need to do this for language too, because there's a lot of things, like as someone who is kind of studying languages on my own, that took me way too long to figure out. So if I can help someone figure this out a little bit faster, you know how it is where you're studying a language and then 6 months down the road, you find this resource and you're like, oh, I wish I had this like six months ago.
What are some of those things you feel like you learned along the way that really helped you in learning languages in general?
Okay, so when I first started to learn Chinese, I was listening to an audio program exclusively, watching lots of YouTube videos. So I didn't connect the written language or pinyin or anything right away. I had this kind of weird, my own personalized romanization, which was awful. looking back at it now. And I wish I had like taken the time to learn pinyin earlier on, and that I had gotten into characters and reading a little bit sooner than I did, because learning Chinese characters, there's just so many.
Well, what got you into Chinese?
So another funny story. So I was done with school. I was learning Croatian. I was like, okay, I'm ready to take on another language. And I'd always been into Japanese culture and Japanese things. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll learn Japanese. And I was like, what about Chinese? So I asked someone, I said, should I learn Japanese or Chinese? They basically handed the decision over to them because I couldn't decide for myself. And they're like, you should learn Chinese. It's way more practical. And I was like, okay, I'm going to learn Chinese because it's way more practical, which is obviously in hindsight, not the best reason to start learning a language. But thankfully, I started to learn it and I fell in love with it. I especially now love characters. I love seeing like the components and the radicals that come together to form a character, and then different characters that come together to form a worm and word. And it's like, oh, it's like almost like a puzzle. And it's like interesting to me. It's like, hey, do you know that the word for tooth is this radical and this radical?
There's that saying as this, you know, the doors of history turn on small hinges. So it's kind of like you just handed over your decision to someone like, ah, Chinese, you know, what if they just said that, oh, you know, Japanese, you know, you probably learn Japanese instead.
Well, I did learn Japanese later on, and I do speak Japanese now. So,
well, there we go.
Yeah. It ended up not being an either or question. I mean, at the time, I don't know, this is kind of this thing that I had even earlier on, like when I was in my teens, I was like, I'm going to learn 8 languages. And at that point, I only spoke French and English. And it was, I don't know where this number 8 came from, but it was like always kind of there in my head. And so then later when I actually started to more seriously pursue languages, I was like, hey, I might actually hit that 8. And I've gone way past that. And
baga, you ba. Know, so it's a lucky number, right? So you must have intuitively known it. And I'm also curious to know, like, how, like, your Chinese progressed a little bit. Cause just for our listeners here, because you were juggling a lot of different languages and you're learning a lot of different things. And maybe you can share a little bit of, like, what was your experience learning some of these other languages? How did that help you learn Chinese?
So with Chinese, I kind of started it and I found out about the HSK exam. So I decided that my goal was within 1 year, one calendar year, to sit the HSK-4 exam. So I bought the HSK practice books. I started working with a tutor probably, I don't know, maybe 4 months into the project. I was basically consuming any Chinese resource I could. I joked, you know, oh, when I have a kid, I'm going to speak to them in Chinese. And I'm going to, like, I'm going to learn it well enough that I can use it with my child. And so I'm studying the language, getting ready. The night before my HSK exam, I found out I was pregnant, which is a little bit, it was a piece of news to receive right before an already stressful exam. So then, like, after sitting the exam, I was like, okay, now I need to really get serious. I've got 9 months to get Chinese down enough that I feel comfortable, like, singing lullabies to my child and then, like, you know, saying basic things to them. So that was something that I was working on. And then when my son got a little bit older, I think it was around when maybe 6 months, I enrolled him in, like, a Chinese immersion class where it was a mommy and me thing. But every time I would go to China or Singapore or Taiwan or wherever, I would buy as many children's books as I could. And then as he started to get older and develop his own interests, then it was like, okay, I've got to find the Disney Cars books in Chinese. His first obsession was finding Dory. So then it was like, okay, I found Finding Dory in Chinese, the movie. And then I got the books in Chinese. And then he became this vehicle for me to, like, kind of figure out what I needed to learn next. You know, as he starts getting older and getting curious, he'd point at something like the fire sprinkler in the ceiling and be like, what's that? And I'd be like, And I'd have this list of words that my tutor and I each week would go through. I remember one lesson where we literally sat down and went through every kind of vehicle you can imagine. So.
Wow. Well, that's quite admirable. I totally know what you mean, especially, like, on the movies. You know, my kids, we whenever we go to China, get all the Disney movies or whatever because they have the Chinese track, right? It was like, you're watching this with the Chinese. Like, no, I want to read. You know, they turn on the Chinese and they just start watching. Yeah. Well, tell me then, it sounds like you've really gotten involved in Chinese, perhaps more than some of the other languages. Why has that been with Chinese in comparison to maybe, you know, French or German or even Croatian?
Ooh, good question. German, I have a love-hate relationship with. So the minute I finished school, I was like, goodbye. And like I said, when I started learning it, Chinese, like, I just totally fell in love. And right before my exam, I went to Beijing for a week and my tutor met me there. She kind of left me on my own to get my subway tickets and buy food and introducing me to different things. And I just loved being there. I loved everything about it. I loved being able to use the language. I know this probably sounds a bit silly, but if I walk up to someone and I say something to them in French, they're like, oh, you're French? And then they start speaking to me. I'm like, no, I'm not actually French. They're like, okay, well, it's not a surprise really that you speak French because French. But if I walk up to someone who speaks Chinese, the reactions are just always like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. And there's just something a little bit gratifying in that. And I know that probably sounds totally silly, but I just, I love it. And one of my best friends I met because I was shopping with my mom and she was in the dressing room. I was waiting for her and these two girls were waiting for their mom as well. And they were speaking Chinese and I felt a little bit awkward because I was kind of eavesdropping, but they didn't know that I understood because it didn't appear that I understood. And at one point the mom comes out and I was like, I think that dress is pretty. And like one of the girls almost fell over. They like all stumbled back several steps and then the next several dresses, they included me in the process. They're like, what do you think of this one? What do you think of this one? And then at the end of it, one of them came up and asked for my number. And we are really close friends now. We do all sorts of things together. She's my travel partner. We've been out of the country and around the country together. I just went to the other girl's wedding. One of the two sisters just got married and I went. So I got to go to my first Chinese wedding. And that would have never happened if I didn't speak Chinese. And, you know, what I went and did in Beijing would have never happened. Some of the things that I've done with music would have never happened if I didn't speak Chinese. I feel like I've hit all of these different personal rewards that just like have kept me going and kept me really involved and really in love with the language.
I love hearing that story. That is a great story. You know, one of the great things about Chinese is Chinese people, they intuitively understand that it's a difficult language. And you also, I love that story you're sharing about running into those girls at the store. This is something I brought up on the show before. And sometimes when you meet like a Chinese person and you like hit it off, it's like instantly bond. We're blood brothers. You know.
Yeah, that's so true. And then I also think like, you know, the experience that I've heard from other people who don't speak Chinese is like, oh, I always feel like I'm not a part of that group or that I'm not going to be accepted into that group. And I'm like, that's just not my experience at all. Just because it's like, okay, I made this effort to learn your language and, you know, people really appreciate it.
Yeah. I want to hear about some of your stories you've had of like breakthrough experiences.
Yes. Okay. So I can tell a really great story. When I was living in Ireland, I lived in a house with 9 people and 3 of my roommates were from China. My house was 3 floors and all of my Chinese roommates happened to be on my floor. So our doors were always facing each other and we shared a kitchen. So each floor had its own kitchen. So I shared my kitchen with these 3 people and I would constantly run into them. I'd go into the kitchen to cook my dinner. I was by myself. They would all be chatting in Chinese. And of course, at this point, I did start to enjoy languages. So I would say, oh, teach me something in Chinese. And they'd like, so that we'd get like this little paper, all sit around the table and they'd start to tell me like what their Chinese names were and like my first few words. And I remember them making fun of my pronunciation. Like I could not get the tones right. I could not get the sounds, the syllables right. Like everything was just horrible. And they would make fun of me for it. And the only Chinese word that I can tell you that I remember from this era was sui bian, because they were a boyfriend and a girlfriend. So the girlfriend constantly is like, sui bian, sui bian, sui bian. So that was all I picked up from my Chinese roommates after, you know, almost 2 years of living with them, but that's okay. So then fast forward to October 2018. And at this point, I had completely lost touch with them because we were friends on Facebook while they were in Ireland. But obviously, that's difficult to access in China. So once they went back to China, I completely lost touch with them. Their emails didn't work anymore. I work for a Japanese music company, and because I speak Japanese, Chinese, and English, they wanted me to go to kind of liaise between the 3 groups. So I was in Shanghai, but for whatever reason, right before I went to Shanghai, one of them sent me a connection request on LinkedIn. And I was like, this is perfect. Peter, I'm going to be in Shanghai. How far are you from Shanghai? They're like, we live in Shanghai. So they decided to take me out for hot pot, which that's another funny story because the whole time I was living with them, they're like, you know what hot pot is? I was like, yeah, like potluck. They're like, no. It's where like everyone gets together and you have a bunch of different dishes. I was like, yeah, that's exactly what a potluck is.
And they're like, that's not hot pot.
Yeah. They're like, no, you don't understand. And I was like, okay, I'll just trust that I don't understand what this is. And so we go, and of course, at this point, you know, I've been speaking Chinese for about 2 years. I finally get to go have hot pot with them. So they take me to a hot pot restaurant in Shanghai. And prior to this point, when I was living with them in the UK, like 100% of our conversation was in English because I didn't speak Chinese. So they had to speak English to me. And like, you know, I'd help them with their English papers, check, you know, spelling and things like that. And then when I went to meet them in Shanghai, it had been several years since they had been in the UK. So they had forgotten 90% of their English. to the point that they were not comfortable using it with me. So that entire evening was in Chinese. And like we picked it up and just like hung out in Chinese as though it had been what we had always done. And I mean, that was huge for me because the language that you establish a relationship in is the language that the relationship stays in. It's really hard to change the language of a relationship. So that was like a huge thing for me, the fact that I was able to change the language of my relationship with my three roommates.
What was that interaction like?
I felt more like I was one of them. Like the whole time I was living with them, these were people that I lived with, but I always kind of felt like the odd one out. We would do different things together as a group. Like we even at one point, all of us went to Scotland together. We took a boat, but I still always kind of felt like the odd man out because, you know, they were most comfortable chatting to one another in Chinese and not in English. And when I was in Shanghai with them, you know, it'd been several years since I had seen them, but it felt like it hadn't been. Like we just picked things off where it left off. And then I felt like I was actually part of the group that time. Like I was involved in 100% of the conversation because they didn't ever at any point have to switch to Chinese to discuss among themselves what something was in English to explain it to me and then maybe give up or maybe not quite get there. And so there were these barriers between us in English that now that I was able to speak Chinese with them, there weren't any longer. So it just created just a completely different feeling.
Well, that's a special experience. Well, I want to know about your job. Tell me about how Chinese has really impacted like your career.
I wouldn't have been sent to Shanghai if I didn't speak Chinese because, I mean, I went to bridge things between the Chinese team and it's particularly the English speaking team. So that opportunity just would have never happened if I didn't speak Chinese. And just day to day, using the language with my son, playing the versions of my video games that I enjoy most in Chinese, you know, because I happen to know how to find an IQ, which is like the Nintendo 64 Chinese version controller. I mean, there's just things that are part of my life that like hot pot that I know about now that otherwise wouldn't exist in my life.
Well, if you could go back and you could do it over again, what would you do differently in learning Chinese?
I would have focused less on preparing for the HSK exam because it is an exam. I probably would have focused more on just speaking and connecting with people first because I think just for languages in general, that connection is a huge part of why I enjoy doing it so much. And wasting a year on exam prep where my head was buried in a book and I wasn't out talking to people, I think that that would be the one thing that I changed.
I don't know if you've seen our Instagram meme account. I have a meme that says, you can't fail the HSK if you don't take the HSK. What advice would you give to someone who's trying to learn Chinese right now?
Don't be intimidated by it. I think we tell ourselves that Chinese is this really difficult language. And I've studied more than 13 languages now. And because I loved it, it wasn't difficult. So languages are as difficult as you make them. And, you know, Chinese kind of gets this bad rap because it's so different from English. There's not really any shared vocabulary. The grammar is completely different, like the boss structure. Oh my gosh, the boss structure. You know, it seems like it's just this huge mountain to climb, but you just kind of take it a step at a time and you'll get there. And it's so worth it. I mean, for me, I almost like Chinese almost feels more worth it than some of the other languages sometimes.
Oh, really? How so?
The fact that, you know, you go to China and a lot of people still don't speak English, whereas if you go to Europe, almost everyone speaks English. But, you know, so then I can actually communicate with people. I remember one time when I was in Beijing, a sudden rainstorm happened. I wasn't prepared for it. So I got stuck under this little tiny awning with a Chinese lady who didn't speak any English. And I was stuck there for a good 10, 15 minutes. And I could have stood there awkwardly next to her going, huh, yeah. But because I spoke Chinese, like I actually got to talk to someone, you know, during that time.
One other thing I was interested to hear about, you said at the beginning you didn't really study characters. What kind of impact did literacy have on your language learning?
Well, at the beginning, I mean, it had a huge impact because when I finally was like, okay, I'm going to do this, I was just like, oh my goodness. Like if I had started doing this earlier on, you know, I at least could have started to learn some of the easier radicals and things like that, so that when I'm looking at this wall of text that I have to prepare for the HSK-4 exam, it's like, you know, here's a paragraph that you have to read and now you need to answer questions about it. And I think there's a couple of things that are really difficult about Chinese. One is that you don't actually have to know how Chinese sounds to be able to read in Chinese. As long as you know what the character meaning are, you can still read in Chinese without knowing like how to actually say what you're reading, which is a little bit strange. And so like there's actually an extra connection that you have to form to connect speaking the language to reading the language. You can literally learn to read in Chinese without ever learning to speak the language. I don't think that exists for any other language. So I already had the connection between what I was hearing and what I was saying, but then I had to go back and add new connections in when I started to read, which just, I think it created extra work for me than if I had taken the time to at least kind of start to build that at the beginning.
Wow. Well, that's great. Shannon, tell us, where can people find out more about you? Where can people find you online?
So my website is eurolinguist.com, eurolinguist.com.
We'll put a link in the show notes for that too.
So you can find me there, and all of my social profiles and everything are linked to that. But if you want to find me anywhere, I'm Eurolinguist on every platform except for Twitter, where it was already taken, and I'm Eurolinguist SK. I know.
Those jerks. Well, that's great, Shannon. I really appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us today.
Thank you again for having me.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, phlebotomists, ministers, sidewalk chalk artists, homeschooler, and that one guy named Steve. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And please write us a review so we know how we're doing. You can find us on Facebook and at mandarincompanion.com. Apologies to John Cena. We just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is James Harper. I'd like to thank our guest, Shannon Kennedy, and I'd like to thank my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Paston. See you next time.